Welcome to Elevating Pikes Peak Women, a podcast production of Pikes Peak Women. I'm your host, Mary Lou Makepeace, and this podcast will be bringing you content relevant to the women of the Pikes Peak region in order to help them get engaged, get empowered, and make a difference in our community. Pikes Peak Women was established in 2011 in response to a need to address critical issues involving women, issues like pay equity, healthcare reform, women's rights, and social equity. Pikes Peak Women also provides forums where women can learn how to engage, become politically active, join local boards, take leadership positions, and run for office. We do this as an independent, nonpartisan organization in collaboration with other organizations whose missions support and strengthen ours. So let's dive right in. Hello, this is Mary Lou Makepeace, your host for today's Elevating Pikes Peak Women. And I have a couple of women in the studio today, and man, they're chomping at the bit. They want to tell you all about things they know. But first, I want to tell you about something I know, and that is that Gold Hill Mesa is our sponsor for today. And they are, I'm sure you know, when you're on Highway 24, you look to the south and you see all these homes growing out of the top of the hill. And if you take the time and drive by or drive in, you'll see it's a lovely neighborhood. And I have friends who live there who say it indeed is a lovely neighborhood, and that if you're looking for a home, check them out. I just want to thank them for supporting Studio 809 Podcasts. Let's get started, ladies. Our topic today is elections, and we're going to narrow in on a couple of topics. Perhaps you got your state book, the blue book that we receive before an election, that you get the analysis of the issues that are going to be on the ballot, as well as some conversation about judge retention. Well, we're not going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about local issues. And you will be getting a local book from I don't know who puts that out. I guess the county. And that should be coming out shortly. We're going to talk about two issues that we think impact women the most. We're not here to lobby you or tell you how to vote. We're here to give you information about the impact of your vote. If you vote to support these issues, or if you vote not to support them. We have in the studio, we have maybe you'll hear more positive than negative, because both of the women are the volunteer chair people of their particular ballots. So the election is November 8th, 2022. And this is an election that will have state questions, and it will have county questions, and it will have local Colorado Springs questions. And the two ladies that I have in the studio who are going to tell us in more detail are Carly Van Arnum and Lynette Crow. Carly is working, she's a volunteer chairperson for the Recreational Marijuana Initiative. And we have Lynette Crow, who is the campaign chair for PPRTA ballot initiative. And if you're not up on what PPRTA means, she'll tell us. Why do we have to have this? Don't all these entities tax us already? And why are they asking for this amount of money for 10 years?
CDOT is the fund, is the extension of the federal government that receives the majority of infrastructure for the state of Colorado. And as you know, most people who pay attention know, the majority of CDOT money stays in the Denver area, stays in that area. Very little of it flows to the rest of the state. That's just probably how it is in most states. So in 2004, some very smart people got together and proposed this tax, 1 cent sales tax, for different municipalities around the state to help with our big infrastructure. This initiative is what's kept El Paso County moving since 2004, when the citizens voted a 1 cent sales tax to pay for large infrastructure projects And a few of those are North Hancock Avenue Bridge replacement, the Austin Bluffs Nevada intersection, the Fillmore Street Corridor improvement, Academy Boulevard reconstruction, the Centennial Boulevard extension for Fontenero and Fillmore, Black Forest Road Corridor, and widening the South Academy Boulevard. One very important thing to know about this structure is there's 9 members on the board that represent these city municipalities, as well as there's a citizen advisory committee that makes sure that the PPRTA stays focused on the projects that make the biggest difference in the Pikes Peak region.
So the projects that you listed are what have been accomplished or are being accomplished with the in 2000?
Those have been accomplished. Those are some projects that people can see the importance of this one cent sales tax. Otherwise, we wouldn't have been able to do those projects with the funding that we get from CDOT and the federal government. There just isn't enough.
And so now there's a new list of projects
that
is proposed to be paid for with this tax, should it be extended.
Mm-hmm. So the fund, it will fund critical projects over the next 10 years, from the extension of Mark Scheffel Boulevard to improvements on Colorado Avenue through Old Colorado City, as well as the extension from Powers to I-25. It's PPRTA is the most important source of funding for majority capacity expansions and intersection realignment in El Paso County. That makes our roads safer, and it makes it easier for motorists to get from place to place. And, you know, whether you're a woman with a busy career or a stay-at-home mom, having safe and sufficient infrastructure is critical in a growing city such as ours. And PPRTA does make a difference, and it does make it easier for motorists.
Well, it seems like we can't keep up. We can't catch up. We're growing so rapidly. And, you know, I've lived here for quite a while, and I remember when Powers Boulevard barely existed. It was, what, 2-lane dirt road. And now the city is way beyond Powers Boulevard. Now, people who don't necessarily go to that part of the community, I mean, people who use that road say, oh, yes, we definitely need that. But what's the allure for people who hardly go east of Academy, much less further east to Mark Scheffel?
Well, infrastructure is an essential responsibility of government, regardless of how the size of your city and which parts of city are growing or not. Colorado Springs has 750,000 citizens, and it's growing at a rate of 25 people per day. Less than half a cent is a very reasonable investment to keep our city moving forward and making sure we have a safe and responsible growth at the same time. When you talk to other politicians in the state and other citizens in the state, they rave and they're very impressed about how El Paso County was able to get this done in 2004 and wish that their communities had the same type of structure of payment or pay to pass this initiative. With these funds, we also can match federal dollars and get a lot more done without these funds, because with matching dollars, if you understand in government, you can match federal funds if you have funds. So it's almost the more you have, the more you can get back. And so for different reasons, that's one of them that's really helped move this initiative forward. And in, just think, in 2021, the cost of asphalt was $2,359 a mile. So it's very expensive. These projects are $200 million projects. Without this 1 cent sales tax, our city wouldn't be able to grow the way it's growing.
And we as a citizen wouldn't be able to move around the community. I mean, we are fortunate that we have fewer touch points where traffic is a bottleneck than a lot of places. Anybody who's driven to Denver in the last several months knows exactly what I'm talking about. Anyway,
yeah, PPRTA was a part of the gap. So PPRTA did contribute, I'm not sure, don't quote me, I think 50,000 maybe, to the gap. For the citizens, you know, it's important that El Paso County and the citizens of Colorado Springs and our Pikes Peak region be able to get to Denver. I mean, that was a hazard in itself and back and forth just for commerce.
Well, what would you say? We talked what these dollars would fund, but what if it doesn't pass? Then what?
Well, we have $1 billion worth of projects that need to be done in the next 10 years. There's, without PPRTA, those projects will not get done.
So we can see the scenario without even talking about them, I guess.
If you're not growing, you're dying. And our city's growing, whether, you know, people like it or not. So they might as well just get on the bandwagon. This is a small investment for big projects for our city. It just makes it a nicer place to live.
What does this do in terms of, I mean, I understand the congestion, but what about, should this not pass, about economic development? How does that impact economic development? Because my belief is that we have to have jobs, just like we have to have housing for people coming in. We have to have jobs for people to come in, or for those of us who are here.
Well, I already mentioned the gap that for commerce, we have a lot of people that go back and forth from Denver, whether it be trucking, supplies. I see a lot of brewery trucks that take back and forth. We have a lot of breweries in this town, and they supply a lot of Colorado, and that's economic development.
Right.
That's commerce. Well, we have Amazon out by the airport. They will be coming up Powers and Mark Scheffel. Our military is growing all the time. Fort Peterson is growing. We've got Banning Lewis. We're widening Mark Scheffel right now, and with the rest of these funds, we'll finish widening Mark Scheffel, but a lot of people are finding it more affordable to live out east in the Banning Lewis area, and that'll just make it safer and more, you know, easier for motorists to go back and forth. Like I said, whether you're a career or you're a stay-at-home mom and you're shuffling those kids around, you have safe highways to do that on, safe streets to do that on.
Well, and I would imagine tourism is impacted also.
Oh, yeah, especially with the development of Old Colorado City and Highway 24 and in coming into that side of town. You know, that's like the gateway from the mountains in, the gateway back up into the mountains. It's very important for tourism, and tourism is one of our biggest economic drivers, especially through the summer for Colorado Springs and El Paso County.
Well, does everybody support this, or are there people who would say, I'm voting no?
There is a portion of people that have said they will vote no because they see it as a tax.
Oh, so any tax is
any tax, I suppose, for that demographic of people, they would say no. It's an extension, but I would just like to remind the people that see this as a tax that is one of the responsibilities of government is the fire, police, and infrastructure, and this fits right into those responsibilities of government.
Well, we expect a lot from our local government, but they can't print money. They can ask citizens for money, for permission to do things like this. So it's hard to, I don't like to spend money on something I'm not going to use personally, and I probably will use this personally as well, but we have to have the broader outlook, I guess.
Yeah, PPRTA is not a partisan issue. Everyone drives on the roads. It shouldn't be a partisan issue. Everybody drives on the roads. Everybody uses the roads. When there's an emergency, you want nice roads. When we have a bomb cyclone, you want nice roads. When we have an Albuquerque low, we all want nice roads. We saw that in 2012, the effect of the potholes. When 2C was passed, everybody felt those potholes. We're getting back to a place where our city is becoming a large city, so we need to act like it and grow up with our city. And some of that is funding these things that we would otherwise not be able to fund.
What's your sense of what's out there? Are people coming on board?
Yep. We have very good polling data, and it will pass. I believe it will pass. I believe that majority of people see that commute, that, you know, the soccer mom, commerce, they do see the need, and we are congested. Like I said, 25 people move here a day. We have people move out with the military as well, but we still have, you know, we're still a growing city.
The net gain is 25.
It's about 25 people a day. So whether people like it that don't want to grow or don't want this to pass, it's going to happen.
You know, I've lived here since gosh, can't even remember, but for decades. And it seems like the subject is always growth. We have too much of it. We don't have enough of it. We need to expand this. We need to shrink back that. And the reality is, just as you're saying, we have to keep up with what's happening. 25 people a day times 30 days in a month, that's a whole bunch of people that have to find a place to live and work and drive.
Yeah, that's, and again, we have, you know, retention with that, and then we have military who move out. So it somewhat balances itself. Mm-hmm. But that's just an example of our city isn't going to stop growing. It's a beautiful place to live. People love living at the base of America's mountain, and the people that want these resources, especially since COVID, where you can work just about anywhere you want to now. Mm-hmm. Look at all the Google kids running around downtown in the daytime and working when they want. They picked Colorado Springs. It's just, you know, a nice place to live. I've lived here for many, many years myself, and we love it here. But at the same time, we want it to stay nice. We want to have nice streets. We want to have nice infrastructure. We want to have a beautiful city to continue to live in.
Well, I'm far from a Google kid, but I love this place, and I agree with you. So what have I not touched on that we want to discuss?
The website, if anybody wants to look at the campaign website, it's www.extendpprta.com, and that's the website for the campaign, or you can go to the pprta.org. And you can see all the projects that are listed.
Okay.
7A will have the ballot issue will be a very long one. It will have the language about the ballot issue itself, and then it will have the projects that you have to pass. So it's
and
a two-part
all of that
question.
Will
yes.
be on the. I was looking at it, and
all of that will be on the ballot initiative.
I was going to have you read it, but I don't think that that's necessary. If people can go online and read it,
it's very long.
Yeah, I mean, I know that all of that is required,
mm-hmm.
but.
So that people see exactly what they're voting for.
Yeah.
Promises kept. Promises. Made Promises Kept was the first initiative that passed. We continue to follow that philosophy. There are very good resources of the dollars that they spend. There's a lot of oversight. Anybody has any questions, they can go on the website and they can see who the board members are, what projects they've done, and how much has been spent, how much is on roads. 10% goes to maintenance, 35% goes to the other entities, and 55 cents goes to the big infrastructure projects.
Yeah, I think there's plenty of oversight.
Yep.
I got all these elected officials that you can contact if you are not
yep.
happy with what it's being spent on. I was just looking at this, the ballot, and it takes up 1, 2, 3... 4, 5,
it's 6. It's really long.
Yeah, yep. 6 pages of 8.5 by 11. And this question will be among the last ones in the ballot. It's going to be a long ballot, and this is a long question. So don't get discouraged when you come upon that on your ballot. Very important, and it's very educational, I think, when you see the projects that are proposed. You realize the breadth of the involvement by communities in our area. So don't say, oh, it's too much, because it's pretty straightforward. It's just lengthy because things like all the projects are listed on there. And quite frankly, wouldn't you want to know where this money's going? Absolutely. That's why it's on there. To say that... if they want to know more information, extend, say that.
Extendpprta.com.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now I'm going to go to our other guest. Shall the ordinances of the City of Colorado Springs be amended to, and then there are 3 points, authorize the regulation of retail recreational marijuana establishments in the same manner as medical marijuana, repeal the prohibition against retail recreational establishments, and authorize medical marijuana establishments to also be licensed as retail recreational marijuana establishments without raising the cap on the number of locations set forth in the city code. So, and this is a for or against question. First of all, it seems to me that we voted on this once. Why are we voting on it again?
You're absolutely right. Thank you for having me here today. I'm Carly Van Arnum, and I'm speaking in favor of issues 300 and 301. And you're absolutely right. Voters did vote on Amendment 64 in 2012. Amendment 64 was a state initiative that amended the Colorado Constitution to do a couple of things. It constitutionally protects recreational cannabis, adult use cannabis, so that anybody who's the age of 21 or over can cultivate, possess, and consume cannabis. It also allowed local jurisdictions to either opt in or opt out of recreational retail cannabis sales. Amendment 64 left that up to each individual local jurisdiction, and they could opt in or out either by asking their voters or passing an ordinance. Now, Amendment 64 passed with a majority vote statewide. It also passed with a majority vote in Colorado Springs by 3,000 votes. Now, what happened in 2013 is our local government, despite the fact that Amendment 64 passed here, they went ahead and passed an ordinance that banned all recreational cannabis sales. Meanwhile, the majority of the rest of the state proceeded to allow recreational cannabis sales, and our state has collected over $1 billion in revenues due to the sale of recreational cannabis. That I'll mention that Colorado Springs has gotten none of that money because we've banned
it. I read someplace in all this paperwork that it's we lose out on $2 million a year?
That's right. Colorado Springs has so far over the last 10 years that we could have had recreational sales, but haven't. We have lost about $150 million to date, and we continue to lose $10 to $15 million a year. Now, these are not hypothetical dollars. These are actual tax dollars that are being collected by Manitou Springs, by Denver, by Pueblo, by all of these local cities, surrounding cities, and Colorado Springs isn't getting any of that money. The state of Colorado collected $423 million in taxes off of recreational cannabis just last year. And had Colorado Springs allowed for the sales in our jurisdiction, we would have gotten a portion of that tax in addition to any local taxes. So this is significant amounts of money that we have left on the table and have quite literally given away to local to surrounding jurisdictions.
Well, I don't see any of the cities that are allowing marijuana sales, say, having a initiated ordinance to say, stop the cash cow here. We have enough. That's not happening.
That's not happening. And in many cases, some cities that have had license caps have gone back and expanded those caps, partly for social equity, to allow some social equity in licensing giving, and just in that the demand is so high that they need more storefronts.
Well, one of the things that I've heard is I think the mayor has argued that there's a cost associated with allowing the sale of marijuana in a community. How would you respond to that?
There are certain enforcement costs. However, Colorado Springs is already set up. We already have the infrastructure for medical marijuana sales right now. So a lot of that enforcement infrastructure is already in place. Cannabis, the medical marijuana industry and the retail marijuana industry are what we like to call self-funded industries, in that the licensing fees go to pay for the enforcement of the industry. So the money to enforce is already there. This would not create an additional burden on our citizens, on our community, on our police, anything like that. We're already self-funded, or the cannabis industry is already self-funded, and the dollars for enforcement are already there. So the fact that the mayor is simply saying, oh, if we start selling marijuana, there's going to be more costs associated, are just not true. And additionally, if we look at those costs compared to the amount of revenue that the city stands to make, $10 to $15 million a year, the benefits exceed or outweigh any negative that the mayor might think that there is.
One thing that struck me as I was preparing for this is what is known as an initiated question. That means that eligible voters in Colorado Springs, signed petitions to get this on the ballot. And if my memory serves me correct, the council has been asked to put this on the ballot, and they have not chosen to do that. So there's another process where citizens can collect sufficient signatures. I think about 20,000 valid signatures were required. And if they accomplish that, then it goes on the ballot regardless of what the local government entity says. An astounding 98,000 signatures were collected, which tells me, it probably tells the council too, that there's a lot of support for this. Did that surprise you and the people that you're working with?
No, we set our goal really, really high, and we well exceeded our goal. This is an issue that is widely supported, not only here in Colorado Springs, but nationwide. I think nationwide, when you look at the numbers, over 70% of adults think that cannabis should be legalized. And the funny thing about this particular issue is cannabis is legal here. It is constitutionally protected in Colorado Springs to cultivate, possess, and consume cannabis. So we're not legalizing cannabis here. All we're doing is allowing for the sale of a constitutionally protected commodity to raise funds to help our growing city meet very important challenges.
Well, if that's the case, why do we have to vote on it?
Because our local government, because of the way Amendment 64 was written, it allowed those local jurisdictions to opt in or out of sales. Now, in many other communities, if they didn't just outright opt in because it passed in their county or their city, they asked the voters. In this case, our mayor and our council, our local government, took it upon themselves. They didn't even give voters the option. And they have been denying voters the option for the last 10 years by simply not referring a measure onto the ballot, which is why finally we as citizens finally came together. It's very, very expensive to do a citizens initiative. The campaign has been very successful at raising funds in order to collect those almost 100,000 signatures to get this on the ballot. And we've done that for a couple of reasons. It's very important to our community. We need to keep these taxes local. As I said, these are not hypothetical dollars. This is actual money that is being collected by surrounding jurisdictions. So it's very important that we as a community bring these tax dollars back to address several issues, the mental health crisis, public safety, these issues that face a large, rapidly growing city. The other reason this is so important is because it does give the voter back that choice. We're finally telling our local government that, you know what, this isn't your decision. This is our decision. You've been denying us this decision, and we're taking that back today. Our local government, unfortunately, has failed us in the last 10 years. They have not represented the will of the people. They haven't even asked what the will of the people is. They've not allowed us to have a say-so. So we went this route in order to give our citizens the say-so, bring these tax dollars back home, and address these local challenges.
Do you feel that who is we? You said we did this. Is it just the marijuana shops that have pulled together? Who is we?
So the biggest proponent for this is Your Choice Colorado Springs. It is a campaign. There have been over 53 individual donations made to this campaign to make this a reality, to allow voters to finally vote on this when you get your ballots this month. So Your Choice Colorado Springs is the campaign behind this initiative, and it is some local cannabis industry absolutely supports this issue, but others statewide are also supporting the issue. Individual citizens that voted yes on Amendment 64 that thought 10 years ago the infrastructure was going to be put into place so they could purchase their constitutionally protected cannabis in their own city instead of having to drive to other cities, they're ready for this to happen. I know other businesses support this issue. So there's two issues. There's 300 and there's 301. 300 is the authorization. This ends the prohibition and allows existing medical marijuana centers to sell recreational marijuana. It's very important to note that no additional storefronts will be created. Only the existing roughly 115 medical marijuana stores would be given the option to also sell recreational cannabis. The second initiative is 301. This would impose a 5% special tax on the sale of recreational cannabis. It would not impact medical medical cannabis. So if you're a medical patient out there, this would not increase the taxes on your medicine. This is simply for recreational sales. This 5% is a local tax. It will stay here locally, and it is earmarked for three very important projects. The first is to fund programs for our veterans who are suffering from PTSD. We have over 80,000 veterans in Colorado Springs who suffer silently day in and day out with PTSD, and there's no funding for these programs to help. So this 5% special tax, some of the funds will be directed to that. Some of it will also be directed to mental health programs, so our friends, our neighbors have access to better access to better funded mental health programs. Mental health, mental illness is the number three cause of homelessness. And we can all look around. I'm sure we've all taken walks up and down Fountain Creek recently or been to a park. And there is a homeless problem here in Colorado Springs right now. Now, the question is, how are we going to address this? Where are we going to get the resources
to address
these issues?
So are you saying that not having licensed sales for recreational marijuana has caused homelessness? Is there a cause and effect here?
Well, the top three causes for homelessness, the first, number three is mental illness, number two is unemployment, and number one is lack of affordable housing. So in no shape or form does having recreational cannabis sales contribute to homelessness. We can see that in our very own city, because if that were the case, then we wouldn't have a homeless problem since we don't have recreational sales. But very clearly, we do have a homeless problem. So the question is, how do we want to address this? Where are we going to get the resources to address this problem? We could raise sales tax, and then every time you go to the grocery store or anytime you're buying your kid new soccer cleats or school uniforms, you'd pay more at the register. Or we can vote yes on 300, allow recreational cannabis sales, and use those tax dollars to address this issue. And that's what 300 and 301 are doing.
So if you don't use it, you're not paying for it.
You're not paying for it, but you're going to receive the benefit of having a cleaner city with less homelessness. You're going to sleep well knowing your neighbors and your veteran friends have access to very important mental health programs. This will increase funding for our first responders, for our firefighters. Lord knows in Colorado Springs, we all know how important firefighters are. If you have lived in any of the areas,
Well, I read or heard a comment, again, made by the mayor saying, I've heard all that before, and none of it came to fruition. And what do you say to that?
Well, the fact of the matter is Colorado did collect $423 million in tax revenue from recreational cannabis last year. So saying that the money isn't there, it's simply not true. It is there. One interesting thing to note is the state of Colorado has a 15% special tax on the sale of recreational cannabis. 10% of that special tax goes to local jurisdictions in the percentage of their sales. So if a local jurisdiction contributed, 30% of the sales, and they would get 30% of that 10% of that special tax. Well, guess what Colorado Springs' portion of that was? $0. We got nothing because we don't allow sales. $423 million is a really big pie, and we can't afford to not have a piece of that pie. And the only way we get that money is if we allow the sales. So perhaps the mayor is saying, well, I've heard all this before and I don't see it. It's like, well, because we don't get any of it. We're not benefiting from it. Go ask Manitou Springs if they've benefited from it. They'll tell you yes. Look at Denver, Aurora, these counties that have done wonderful things with their cannabis dollars. No, we haven't seen it because we haven't allowed it, Mr. Mayor.
The other thing that I've heard him say, and I don't know, other people may have said it too, but they don't have the platform that the mayor does, but it is a whole issue of the military, that the military doesn't permit their members to use, and that would be a deterrent. For instance, in the decision of where the space program should go, what do you say about that?
This is a very misleading statement, and the truth of the matter is it has been debunked a few times. Actually, in 2013, the Pentagon first went on record saying that local cannabis policy does not dictate their missions. It doesn't impact their missions at all. The U.S. military, long before Colorado even legalized recreational cannabis, has operated in spaces where cannabis is legal. Take the Netherlands, for example. They allow their soldiers to go there on leave. people, they have, you know, strategic assets in places that have legal cannabis, but the military has their own zero tolerance policy. So local cannabis policy does not impact their strategic decisions. Furthermore, Washington legalized cannabis the same year that Colorado did. The Pentagon has invested an additional $150 million in their joint base there near Tacoma, Washington. Tacoma, Washington has recreational cannabis sales. One of the largest naval bases is in San Diego, California, that has recreational cannabis sales. So recreational cannabis sales has proven time and time again to not impact the military. And even more interesting, most recently, the Air Force has announced that they are taking a different approach to marijuana use for their cadets. They're finding that as marijuana is legalized in more and more places, they're creating somewhat of an allowance for the cadets. Or their recruits, I guess, is the correct word. For their recruitment policies, they're taking a more lax stance on cannabis use until, of course, you know, they're beyond the recruit phase, then they would go to their zero tolerance policy. But even the U.S. military is taking this nationwide sweep of cannabis legalization into account. It's not deterring them. They're not going anywhere. We have, how many military bases do we have here? Five or six,
yeah.
They're not going anywhere. The military, the Department of Defense spokesperson has said as much. It's just not true.
They have their ways of dealing with it.
They do.
They don't necessarily adhere to our ways, should that be that.
That is correct. Yeah. And furthermore, if it was going to deter them, it would have deterred them when we legalized cannabis 10 years ago.
You spoke a little bit about where the money would go. Can you articulate that once again?
Certainly. So 301, if 301 passes, it would add that 5% special tax to recreational cannabis sales, and that would go to funds for our veterans for PTSD, to mental health, and to public safety. Now, in addition to the 5%, we would also get a portion of that 10% state tax, and there would also be just regular local sales tax. Local sales tax is broken up between the general fund, TOPS, public safety, and the 2C road tax. So in addition to the 5%, we would also get the 10% plus the local tax. The local tax obviously is already divvied up how it is. That 10% tax, there hasn't been a lot of conversation thus far on where that would be directed. We can look at local municipalities to see what they have kind of done
with
it.
Who decides it?
For this, the state 10% tax, I would imagine that would be city council. For the 5% special tax, they don't have a choice. Those three programs, PTSD, the mental health, and the public safety, it has to go there. A citizens oversight committee will be created to ensure that those tax dollars are being directed right to where voters want them to go. Anybody listening to this podcast, you or I, could apply to be part of that citizens oversight committee to ensure that our veterans are reaping the benefits of that tax, that are public safety and our
One thing I've heard not the current police chief, but a former police chief talk quite extensively about the evils of marijuana on juveniles. Can you explain the position as it relates to people under 21?
I can. Actually, the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment recently came out with their Healthy Kids survey for this last year, and we have actually seen a significant decrease in the percentage of students who are consuming cannabis. It dropped 13.3% in just 1 year. So fewer kids are using cannabis. And additionally, there's a roughly 37% decrease in kids under 13 who are using it. So not only are fewer students using it, but if they are experimenting with it, it's at a much older age. And this is all since legalization in 2012. Since we passed Amendment 64 and since we've introduced regulated sales into the state, we have seen youth use drop drastically. So again, that fear from 2012, oh, what have we done? We've legalized this, has largely been debunked over actual data. I mean, we can see the trends. The trends often in Colorado align with the United States in general. So having cannabis in Colorado hasn't drastically increased cannabis in or youth use of cannabis, and in fact, it's done the opposite. It's decreased it. This is what happens when you take something off the black market where it's widely accessible and available and put it into a regulatory structure. The cannabis industry has a 98% compliance rate when it comes to underage sales. So 98% of the time, they are compliant. The cannabis dispensaries are doing an excellent job in keeping cannabis out of the hands of the youth.
But the black market still exists.
There is still a black market out there. We have seen it drastically drop here in Colorado. But, I guess on some level that might always exist unless there's full-out federal legalization. But certainly in the areas that you have regulated sales, that black market drops dramatically. Especially in Colorado, where we see such good competition, where it's just not worth it for anybody to not do it legally.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I've pretty much exhausted all the questions that I have. You are, I want you to, though, articulate what happens if this doesn't pass.
Sure. So if 300 and 301 don't pass, basically is what's going to happen is Colorado Springs is going to continue to lose $10 to $15 million a year in sales tax. We will not have the resources to help our veterans. We will not have the resources to address the homeless problem. We will not have resources to increase public safety. These problems will continue to grow. We just won't have the resources to handle them. So we'll have to make some decisions as citizens. Are we going to want to pull money out of our own pocket to pay for this? Are we just going to live with it and let it continue? Or are we going to allow the sale for a perfectly legal commodity that's available 4.6 miles from the mayor's office, not even an 11-minute drive from the mayor's office, allow that in our city to help with these problems without increasing taxes on our citizens?
Are you getting requests to speak to groups?
I'm not personally. I know that the campaign in general has been out there talking to a lot of folks. The campaign manager has been out there talking to a lot of people. But again, we see wide support for this issue. I think a lot of people have that same mindset as it's legal here. It not allowing the sales is not keeping cannabis out of our city. It's just keeping revenue out of our city. So it's here. Colorado Springs might as well reap the benefit from it.
Lynette, have you been getting a lot of requests for speaking to talk about the issue?
Yeah, I have. I have from organizations like the Realtors Association, HDR, which is an engineering group, Move Colorado, which is a lobbying group for infrastructure, asphalt, cement. So HBA, the housing and building industry, those industries, I have absolutely been getting a lot of requests from.
And they're generally in support.
They're all in support.
Okay.
It's an economic driver for these businesses.
Well, ladies, I want to thank you so much for being here and helping all of us, our listeners, as well as those of us in the room here, to know more about the issues and the realities of passage and the realities of non-passage. So I would say to our listeners, whatever your position is, by all means, vote. I mean, it can't be decided by a handful of people. And there are other issues on the ballot, which we're not covering, that need your vote and your voice and your vote as well. So the date for the election is November 8th, I think. November 8th. You should shortly be receiving a document from the county that has these questions on it and explains some of the same stuff that we had today, but does with all the issues that are on the ballot, so you can see the different perspectives, pro and con, for them. I want to thank you for joining this podcast today, Elevating Pikes Peak Women, and thank you again, ladies. It's been a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Elevating Pikes Peak Women. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if so, please consider leaving a review wherever you listen to podcasts or share with your friends on social media or in person. For more information, check out our show notes. If you are interested in learning more about Pikes Peak Women, visit us on Facebook. Until our next episode, I'm your host, Mary Lou Makepeace.